which have been left Mitzrayim for a number of years. It's a very interesting incident that happens on his way back to Mitzrayim. He almost loses his life on his way back to Mitzrayim. Moshe takes his wife and children and puts them on a chamor and they go towards Mitzrayim. And Vahi Baderach Mamolin, and was on the road when they were staying over. Vayifgesheyu Hashem, and Hashem met him. Vayivakesh Hamisa, and he wanted to kill him. Moshe met Hashem, and Hashem wanted to kill him. Vatigach Tzipor Tzor, so Tzipor took a rock. Batichros is Orlov's bino, and she cut the Orlov of her son, Batagal Raglov, and it fell to the feet of Maisha. Batayma ki chasan damim atali, you are my chasan, my husband, because of blood. In other words, you're alive because of the damila. There's a lot to understand about this parasha, and I haven't yet been zeichet to understand it as clearly as I'd like. But I want to clarify this evening 2 points. First of all, why this whole story happened? It's interesting. We're in the middle of starting the stories of Yetzias Mitzrayim over here, and Moshe Rabbeinu went in the beginning of the parasha. Moshe Rabbeinu saw the Yidden working, and Moshe Rabbeinu saw the Ish Mitzri hitting the Yidden, and then he ran away, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to him and told him to save Klal Yisrael, and he's heading back to Mitzrayim. And in the middle, we have this little side point here, a little bit off the tangent. It would not sell very well as a book. It's a little getting off the topic. And on his way back, he wasn't Malach's son, and therefore the Malach came to kill him. When it says, Vayif Kesheyu Hashem, Rashi says it was a Malach. The Malach came to kill him, and Tzipora, quick thinking, she quickly was mal her, his son, and now Moshe could continue on his road back to Mitzrayim to free Klal Yisrael. What's this doing here? What does this have to do with what Moshe is going to do in Mitzrayim? It can't be a coincidence. So it's a good time now, in the beginning of Parashat Shemayis, to understand the whole, to talk a little bit, at least in a little bit of a cloyistic way, about what these next few parashas that we see some time are all about. We tend to automatically revert back to our childish understanding of these things. And the way the world understands these parashiyas sometimes becomes our instinctive way of understanding it, that the Jews were enslaved and Moshe came and he saved them from their slavery. And what you see as Mitzrayim really is so much more makif and so much more fundamental than this. Than, you know, in history there are many enslaved peoples that have been freed from their slavery, declaration of independence and so on and so forth. That's not... Yetzias Mitzrayim is much deeper than that, and much more than that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created an Adam in a world, and he created this Adam with a job, and that job was to serve Hashem in the world that he put him in. And he gave him a Nisayon, not to eat from the Eitz Hadas, and Adam failed at Nisayim, and he ate from the Eitz Hadas. As soon as that happened, the whole Tzura of Adam changed. The Gemara says that Heiniach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kapay Olav Umiyatay, Hashem put his hand on him and made him smaller. At that moment that Adam Rishon did the Chet, and at the time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished Adam for that Chet, the whole Tzura of Adam changed, and he became a much, much smaller, much more physical Nivra. L'mashal, no, used to be before Adam did the chait that the Yetzirah was outside of him. And his guf and his neshama were just two aspects of his serving Hashem. He had a neshama that wanted to serve Hashem, and he had a guf that wanted to serve Hashem. After the chait, it wasn't that way. After the chait, the ra and the Yetzirah and the Gashmias became part of Adam himself. And now he has a neshama that wants to serve Hashem, and a guf that doesn't want to serve Hashem. A much lower form of Adam. A much smaller Adam. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu never intended that that should be a permanent situation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu never wanted that that smaller form of Adam, it should remain that way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a plan that there's going to be a nation that's going to restore the grandeur of Adam. There's going to be a nation that's going to return to the Madrega of Adam and do the job that Adam was supposed to do. The big, all-encompassing job that Adam was supposed to do in this world will be accomplished by that nation, and that's Klal Yisrael. And that's the pasuk in Yecheskel that we quote very often, that the Navi says, Adam Atem, you are Adam, and the Gemara dashes, Atem Kriyam Adam, you are called Adam. You, Klal Yisrael, are called Adam. Ve'ein Umas Ha'olam Kriyam Adam, and the Gaish countries are not called Adam. You, Klal Yisrael, are called Adam. And there's different stages of the development of this return to the Madrega of Adam, and the ultimate stages didn't happen yet. The first stages was the existence of an Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, who laid the foundations for that Adam. And then there was Yitzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah. And then there was going into Eretz Yisrael. And ultimately, Yimaisa Mashiach and Asad Lavai, the finishing touches will be put on this Adam. What happened by Yetzias Mitzrayim was, if we could say it in one sentence, is that Klal Yisrael went down to Mitzrayim as the Adam of after the Chait, and they went out of Mitzrayim as the Adam of before the Chait. Now it's true that they hadn't returned to the Madrega of Adam Kaidim HaChait when they came out, but they came out as the nation that's destined to be that special Adam. Their identity, their purpose, their focus, their job was defined at Yetzias Mitzrayim. It was the birth of a new Adam. And when I use the word birth, I'm using that on purpose. Chazal described Yetzias Mitzrayim as a leida. It's a birth. Just like when any time a person is born, you have the birth of an Adam. Yetzias Mitzrayim, when Klal Yisrael came out from Mitzrayim, it's the birth of this special Adam of Atem Kruyam Adam. It's the birth of this special Klal Yisrael. Forty-nine days later, this Klal Yisrael stood by Har Sinai and rose up higher than all the Umos because of their new Madrega of Chiyuvim and Mitzvahs and Torah, which is a much, 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 much higher existence than the existence of the Umos HaOlam that just have seven Mitzvahs B'nei Noach. Okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Adam, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu created behemoths. Behemoth, Chaya, Oil, Dog. And there's a pasuk that says like this. Pru Urvu, be fruitful and multiply. Umilu es haaretz, and fill the world. The Chivshua, and conquer it. Uridu and rule, bidgas hayom on the fish of the sea, ubaifa shamayim and the birds of the sky, ubebam asa'aret and the behemoths of the land. So in this pasuk, Adam is given his job to be in control, to conquer, to rule over that man should rule over the animal kingdom. Not like today where people think that man just exists to protect the animal kingdom, to serve the animal kingdom, to make sure that the animal kingdom can continue to flourish. But rather, the Adam was created, not being nice to animals, but Adam exists in this world to be in control, uridu, to be in control, to rule, b'digas hayom u'bo'ef ha'shamayim u'be'be'em ha'tza'aretz. I'm just reacting to the display by the rainforest, I think it is, in the Bronx Zoo, that if you go over there, they have a constant display telling you how many people are in the world. And the idea being that the more people there are, the less room there is for animals. It's not in the spirit of Uridu, but you gotta say, Yom HaBoef HaShemayim U'Beveim HaSaoretz. Now the truth is that this pasuk could be understood in three different ways. Because just as there's Adam in the world and there's Behema in the world, within a person himself also there's Adam and there's Behema. The seichel of a person is the Adam of the person, the intelligence of the person, and the body of a person, the natural instincts of the person, that's the Behema of the person. And in that also is the mitzvah of that Adam is given uridu b'digas hayom u'bo'ev Hashem u'be'em ha'saretz, that the way Rav Huttner says it, the Adam sheba Adam should rule over the behema sheba Adam. The Adam of Adam, meaning the seichel, should rule, should dominate, should control the behema sheba Adam, meaning all his instincts, impulses, desires, and so on. So that's one other way. That's a second way that the pasuk is misparish. There's a third way. And that's Klal Yisrael in relation to the Goyim. After Adam did his chait, so Adam became more gashmi. He became more behema. The Yetzirah became part of him. He became more physical, more behema. The Adam of before the Chait, in relation to the Adam after the Chait, is like saying the Adam Sheba Adam in relation to the behema Sheba Adam. Because the Adam of after the Chait is much more a behema, even though he's far from a behema, than the Adam of before the Chait. So in that sense, also we can understand the pasuk to mean that Klal Yisrael, who's the seichel of the world, the Atem Kriyam Adam of the world, we're supposed to be on the Madrega of Adam before the Chait, should rule and should control the Behema, the Chaya, the Oifus, which is the Adam of after the Chait, the Adam of Gashmias, the Behema Sheva Adam. In other words, just like in my body, is the seichel is the Adam Sheba Adam, and the guf is the Behema Sheba Adam. If you take all of humanity and make it into one body, Klal Yisrael is the seichel Sheba Adam, and all the other nations are the Behema Sheba Adam. Even though, of course, in relation to animals, they're Adam, but in relation to Klal Yisrael, they're Behema.
In what sense does it mean that we should rule over the...
If I don't get back to it, I'll get to it after. I probably will get back to it. The Ramban, I think in Parashas Lech Lecha, says that the reason why the Bris Milah is dafka and the Aver that it is because the inyan of the Milah represents a person taking control over his taivus, a person taking control over his guf. the bleeding, chasan damim lamu, is the bleeding, to a certain extent, ki adamu anefesh. Dam represents the life of a person. When a person bleeds, it represents the inyan of misa, the inyan of killing. Letting go, someone puts a chabura in, and a person's not allowed to put a chabura in himself. You're not allowed to make yourself bleed. Ki adamu anefesh. The inyan of Mila, of the bleeding of Mila, is to show that we're, so to speak, killing the guf, making it less important, making it less free by being mamlich the seichel on top of it. I'm weakening the guf by putting a melech on top of it, and that's the seichel. Is a part of Bris Milah. Bris Milah is made up of two mitzvahs. There's the cutting of the Orla, Milah and Priya, is the cutting of the Orla, and then there's peeling down the skin until the Atara is revealed. Nizgala ha'Atara. Some people have a minute to call out by the Milah. Nizgala ha'Atara. Atara means a crown. I recently saw that it's not a coincidence that we say such a word. The crown is revealed by the Bris Milah, because Bris Milah reveals the crown. The seichel of a person, the intelligence of a person, the neshama of a person is supposed to be the melech. That's why when a person stands up, his head is on top. The crown, where does a king place the crown? He doesn't put it on his shoulder. A king puts a crown on his head. The roish is the melech. So when a person does the milah, which represents that the guf is not in control, that the seichel is in control, nizgala ha'atara, the malchus was revealed.
As you mentioned on Sunday,
so after the chet of Adam Arishan, which made him so much more physical and so much more susceptible to the impulses of the guf, Chazal tell us that the Arla grew on Adam. Adam wasn't born with an Arla. Adam was created Mahul. That's the Shleimus of Adam. The Arla came as a result of the Chet of Adam Arishan. So the Arla represents the opposite of what that pasuk that I mentioned represents. The Arla represents the Shlita of the Guf over the Seichel. And the act of Mila is a kiyum of uridu b'dgas hayam v'ba'oif hashmayim, putting the seichel back in control. And as we find very, very, very often when we learn Chumash, when we find certain parts of one idea present, if we look carefully, sometimes we'll find all the parts of that idea present, because it's one idea. At the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, that was a time of Uridu B'Dgasim B'Yifashram. That was a time in the world of the Adam Sheba Adam taking his role as the Melech, taking his role as the leader of the world, no longer being Avadim to Mitzrayim, but being Shailet. They're coming out of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is now no longer powerful enough to hold them. They demonstrate that they're more powerful than Mitzrayim. If Mitzrayim can't hold on to them and they could just walk out of the country that no slave was ever freed from, Chazal say, so that shows that they're the powerful ones. So Yetzias Mitzrayim is the shlita of the Adam Sheba Adam in Umais, on the Behema Sheba Adam in Umais. But in order to have Yetzias Mitzrayim, Klal Yisrael had to eat a Korban Pesach. And in order to eat the Korban Pesach, Kol Oral Lo Yerichal Boy, an Oral can't eat the Korban Pesach. Someone who doesn't have a bris milah, someone who within him himself, the Adam Sheba Adam is not Shailit on the Behema Sheba Adam. He doesn't have Nizgala Ha'atara. He doesn't have the Malchus of the Seichel being on top. So that person is not ready for Yitzias Mitzrayim, which in this terms of all the Ummahs, of all the nations, is the Shlita of the Adam Sheba Adam on the Behema Sheba Adam. And not just that, but you find at that time also the shlita of the Adam on behemoths, as we find that by when Klal Yisrael took at the time of the Makkos, it says, and when Klal Yisrael took the Korban Pesach, these are two separate things. Hang on 1 second. By the Makkos, it says that Leyechratz Kelav L'Shaynay. It says that a dog won't. I don't know exactly what it means. It won't
sharpen
bark. I'm not sure exactly. I think it means to sharpen, but it means that the kelav won't start up. The kelav and the dogs were quiet. Even though, as far as the Mepharshim say, even though it says that usually when the Malach HaMavos is around, dogs go crazy, but the dogs won't say a word because of the shlita of the Adam on Behema. And similarly, we find a similar thing by the Adam to other Adams that we mentioned, that it says that when Klal Yisrael took the Korban Pesach, it says they were taking the Avodah Zarah of Mitzrayim to Shecht, and the Mitzrayim, that's the Nes of Shabbos Agado, that the Mitzrayim were speechless. It was like they were paralyzed. What were they paralyzed from? Because Klal Yisrael was in front of their eyes becoming a higher form of Adam. Gemara says, in I think in Brachas, that an animal doesn't attack an Adam until it's Nidma Alav Kebehema. An animal doesn't attack a person unless he thinks the person is a Behema. Because instinctively the animal understands that an Adam is higher. And you don't attack. The same thing is true by the Goyim. The Mitzrayim won't attack Yidden when they take the Korban Pesach when they realize that this is an Adam that's higher. Just like a lion won't attack a person because a person is higher. It's higher in the ranks of creation. If he thinks he's a behemoth, it's Nidma Olav Kebehemoth, then he attacks him. And that's the pshat in the Seifei Tevis that the Baal HaTurim brings in the beginning of Shemais. Ve'ela Shemais b'nei Yisrael haba'im Mitzrayma. So b'nei Yisrael haba'im Mitzrayma, if you take the last letter of each word, it makes up the word Mila. You have to change around the order. It makes up the word Mila. And the Baal HaTurim says, because b'schus Mila they came out of Mitzrayim. And that's mamish what we're explaining. It's mamish the Mila that took them out of Mitzrayim. It's the Nizgala Ha'atara. It's the revelation of the Malchus, of the Shlita, of the Seichel on the Guf, that allows for the Seichel of the world to be Shailah on the Guf of the world, which is Klal Yisrael on Umas Ha'ilam. So perhaps, when Yaakov Avinu was preparing himself that he should not be buried in Mitzrayim, it seems that the process of taking Yaakov out of Mitzrayim and burying him in Eretz Yisrael is a maisa of a simen labanim of Klal Yisrael coming out of Mitzrayim. For example, we spoke last week that Klal Yisrael is called Yisrael because we're all really part of Yaakov Avinu. All of our collective neshamas are the neshama of Yaakov Avinu. We are Yaakov Avinu. And that's what it means, Yaakov Avinu loy meis. So when Yaakov Avinu gets carried out of Mitzrayim and into Eretz Yisrael, that's a precursor of us being carried out of Mitzrayim and into Eretz Yisrael. And the greatest raya to that is that if you learn Masechta Saita, you know that the way that they carried Yaakov out of Mitzrayim, the Shvatim stood around the Aron of Yaakov in exactly the same tzura that the Shvatim would walk around the Aron when they went for 40 years of the Midbar. Reuven exactly in the same place, Yehuda in the same place, Yisachar in the same place. There was a certain way that the Degolim surrounded the Aron in the Midbar, and that's how the Shvatim walked around the Aron of Yaakov, walking to Eretz Yisrael. It was much like a rehearsal of Yitzias Mitzrayim. So Yaakov Avinu felt like Pari was trying to hold back, just like he would years later by Yitzias Mitzrayim. Pari was trying to hold back, but by him managing to get out of Mitzrayim and be buried in Eretz Yisrael, he's creating the energy, the kayach, like by all the Maisa of Yisim and Levanim, he's creating the capacity and the kayach that his children one day will be able to get out of Mitzrayim. He's putting it into their genes. He's putting in the energy that his children will be able to come out of Mitzrayim. But what chus will his children be able to come out of Mitzrayim with? B'nei Yisrael haboyim Mitzrayim, the chus of the Mila. So Yaakov Avinu said, Simna yodcha tachas yirechi. Put your hand by the Mila. In other words, yeah, he's invoking the kayach of Mila. Nizgala ha'atara. Al nosik b'reini b'mitzrayim. Get me out of Mitzrayim. That's mamish, the chus of Mila, taking him out of Mitzrayim. After that, he said, swear. Rashi says that the Simna yodcha tachas yirechi is also part of the Shua. I'm not coming to argue on Rashi. It's possible that this could be another pshat. Or it could just be that this is why the psukim separated, to point out that not only is the Simna Yodcha Tachas Yirechi a shvua, but it had a separate purpose. It had the purpose, Kishehu La'atzmai, to invoke the Kayach of Mila, and that's why Yaakov Avinu, Avram Avinu, picked Mila because it was Ba'alai B'tzar, because it was Moshe Nefesh for it. And Yaakov picked Mila because Bischus Mila Yatzu Avay Seinam in Mitzrayim. The Baal HaTurim brings in the beginning of Parashat Shemos, Ve'ela Shemos B'nei Yisrael. That's what he spoke about on Sunday. Ve'ela Shemos B'nei Yisrael, Rashi Tevis. I think that, I'm not sure if he did this, I was planning on speaking this Shabbos about Shnayim Mikra Ve'echa Targum because of this Baal HaTurim. Rashi Tevis. Ve'ela is Rashi Tevis. Ve'odam Asher Loimeid HaSeder. A person who learns the Seder. Shemois, Shnayim Mikra Ve'echa Targum, twice the Sukkim and once the Targum. B'nei, B'koil Noim Yashir, in a pleasant voice he sings it. Yisrael, Yichya Shonim Rabbis Aruchim La'olam, will live for many long years. I was wondering about that also. I have a theory about it. So first of all, it's very, very nice, Roger Davis. What's it got to do with Ve'elish Mois B'nei Yisrael Abayim Mitzrayim? And second of all, what's the Mida Keneged Mida? That if you do Shnayim Mikra Ve'echa Targum, you'll live a long life. What's the Mida Keneged Mida? You say, if you prolong somebody's life, you'll live a long life. I understand. Mida keneged mida. If I do shnayim mikra ve'echa targum, you live a long life. Sometimes I feel like it takes so long to be do shnayim mikra ve'echa targum, but I'd rather that's not the pshat. The Svarim explained that Shnayim Mikra Ve'Echadagim, we've talked about this concept before, but just to say very quickly, that there's a big difference between Lashon Kodesh and Lashon Targum. And that is that Lashon Kodesh, but the truth is the Targum doesn't have to be Dafke in Aramaic either. The Targum could be in any language. You could do Shnayim Mikra in any language. Echa Targum could be in any language. But Lamashal, this aspect we haven't discussed in a while, but we once had a chabura on this that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah in all 70 languages. Hayil Moshe Ba'eres HaTorah Hazois. Moshe wrote the Torah in all 70 languages. There were stones when they came to Eretz Yisrael. There were stones on which they wrote the Torah in 70 languages. What's the point of writing the Torah in 70 languages? They spoke Hebrew. On some of the cases where they wrote it in 70 languages, the chance that the Goyim should be able to come and see the Torah. But there were times, I don't have it now, the details with me right now, but there are times that they wrote the Torah in 70 languages and Goyim never saw it. It was covered over right away. The Goyim never saw it. So what's the point of writing in 70 languages? Or let me ask you another question. In order to be in the Bezdin HaGadol of Yerushalayim, you have to know all 70 languages. Why do you have to know all 70 languages? Klal Yisrael spoke Hebrew. If I don't know Chinese, I can't be in the Bezdin HaGadol of Yerushalayim because maybe one day my entire life someone will come to a case in Yerushalayim that speaks Chinese. Why do you have to know all 70 languages? But in language, just like there's the neshama and the guf in a person, just like there's the hema and adam in the world, just like there's Klal Yisrael and Umas Ha'olam, there's Lashon Kodesh and all the other languages. Lashon Kodesh is inherently Kodesh, it's the language that the Torah was given in, and all the other languages are mundane languages, they're not inherently Kodesh. They're like the guf. Just like the guf is... Compared to the neshama, a guf of a yid is kaddish, but compared to the neshama, it's not inherently kaddish. And the concept of Shnaya Mikra ve'Echa Targum is that by learning and chazaring the Mikra, the Kedusha could spill over even onto the guf part, even onto the not kaddish part. Even that when I do it in a different language, I could say words of Torah. That the Kedusha of Torah could spill over into the mundane. And that's the idea of Moshe taking the Torah and explaining it in 70 languages, that the Kedusha of the Torah could be Mekadesh. All 70 languages. All different 70 languages obviously represents all different chachmas and personalities of different umas and midas of different umas. The chachmas Torah could spread and encompass everything. That's the idea of knowing 70 languages, translating the Torah into 70 languages, is that your Kedusha is not just locked up in the realm of pure Kedusha, but it's so Kaddish, it's such a Mayim of Mayim Chayim, that it spills over and it's Mekaddish even the Chayil. That's Shnayim Mikra Ve'Echa Targum. So when we're heading into Yitzias Mitzrayim, we're heading into the parashas of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which that's what it's about, the shlita of the Adam Sheba Adam on the Behema Sheba Adam, putting the seichel in control of the guf, not letting the guf run wild, but putting the seichel in control of the guf, that the way that the guf acts is subject to the hashpa of the seichel. A mashal to that, another manifestation of that, is that the way that I speak the mundane language is subject to the Kedusha of the Torah, which comes from Lashon Kodesh. So Nashi, let me ask you something. Before Adam did the Chet, how long was he supposed to live?
1,000 years.
Before? Forever. And after the Chet?
1,000 years.
1,000 years. Right. So, his Arichas Yamim was very cut short by the Chet. Right? Very, very much cut short. In other words, we see from there that when the Adam Sheba Adam is not so in control of the Bema Shaba Adam. If there's Gashmias in there, if there's the Achar Hachet, the more disconnect there is between the Guf and the Neshama, the less Arichas Yamin there is. Before the Chet, there was a full connection between the Guf and the Neshama. So they live forever. After the Chet, there's a disconnect between the Guf and the Neshama. So there's a limit. You're Bar Misa. So when we talk about Shnai Mirkav and Echad Targum, we're talking about maintaining the connect, that the other languages, the Chayil, the mundane, should be affected by the Kedusha, should be able to be used to explain words of Torah. So that's what he says. Yichya Shonim Rabbis Aruchim La'olam. It creates an Arichas Yamim. It's more life, more Chiyus. Everyone's aware of this that Chazal say, that the Sfarim bring actually, that the weeks of Shemais Va'era, Bai V'Shalach, Yisrael Mishpatim are special Zmanim, Misugel for Tshuva, and this topic of Inyanim of Taiva and the impulses of the Guf. Shemais Va'era, Bai V'Shalach, Yisrael Mishpatim. Shavivim. The Rosh Hashanah is a Shmoyz Va'er, Boi V'Shalach Yisrael Mishpatim is Shavivim. According to what we're saying now, people think it's like some kind of a detached, like, Kabbalistic thing, and perhaps it's also that. But according to what we're saying now, it's mamash, just the... It's the Liman HaTayr of the Parshas of these weeks. That's what it is. The Liman HaTayr of the Parshas of these weeks is the Shlita of the Seichel over the Guf. The Shlita of the Leda of this new Adam who can't be held back, who can't be controlled by the Umas Ha'olam. Rather, he's in control. He's the Melech. And we said that every single one of those Yidden had to have a Mila, because within himself also he needed that the Adam Shabbat Adam should rule over the Behemah Shabbat Adam. So that's the Divrei Torah. That's what comes out of this. Yitzias Mitzrayim is the Shlita of the Seichel over the Guf. Especially Mitzrayim, we know, is the Erev HaSa'aretz. Mitzrayim was the most Gashmiistic, immoral, Pritzistic place in the world. And Klal Yisrael's coming out from there with a Malchus. Not Klal Yisrael... Klal Yisrael is defeating Mitzrayim, and going out of Mitzrayim represents the defeat of the impulses of the Guf when facing the Ur of the Seichel. Shavivim ends Yisrael Mishpatim. That's Kabbalah Tzatayra. That's the Seichel. Until Klal Yisrael has that Seichel, that's Yisrael Mishpatim. When there's a Chaydash Ha'ibra, they say it goes to even till Truma Tetzava, Shavivim Tat. Truma Tetzava, that's the Hashras Hashchina in a Gashmias, the Kabayas. That's again the Seichel. The Seichel bringing Kedusha to the Guf. We were talking this week by a second Seder, it's been on my mind ever since. Don't ask how we got into it from Gemara and the Eighth Perek. About how sometimes words are used in the street to mean a certain thing, and we grow up thinking that's the meaning of those words, and it's not the meaning. It's just a mistake. And one of the examples that we said was the word freedom. We live in a land of freedom, and George Bush is trying to spread freedom and freedom. In the world, freedom means freedom to be a behemah. That's what freedom means. I don't mean that everybody is a behemah, but it's freedom that if I so am so inclined, I can be a behemah if I want. It's freedom is no control, rather freedom. It's like the opposite of control. If I'm controlled, I'm not free. And if I'm free, I'm not controlled. Freedom is taking the bounds off. That's freedom. But that's not our definition of freedom at all. Ein lecha ben chayrin ela misha esek v'tayra. The only free man is someone who's involved in Torah. That's freedom? That's freedom, being involved in Torah? I don't know, it says in the Mishnah, in Avos. Kachi darka shel Torah. This is how you should learn Torah. Eat bread and water, sleep on the floor, and work hard. Doesn't sound like freedom to me. That's freedom? Sounds like we need to be liberated. That's freedom? We don't know what freedom means. We've been exposed to a mistaken conception of what freedom is. So what does freedom mean? So if I have to say in one sentence what freedom is, freedom is when all of my impulses, desires, talents, creativity are properly harmonized to bring out the greatest me. That's freedom. Freedom is when you have a concert, you have a symphony orchestra, and you tell them, okay, guys, play. What should we play? Whatever you want, freedom. It's not much of a band, it's not much music. What kind of music is that? When you have a conductor who conducts, now it's time for the violins, now it's time for this one, now it's time for that, now it's time for the flutes, now all the different instruments at the right time, at the right place, the most beautiful music comes out. Freedom is not that we become, instead of slaves to this human being, we become slaves to our bodies. That's also slavery. It's also out of control. That's also slavery. True freedom and true happiness comes from true freedom. True freedom is when there's a conductor to this orchestra. And the Torah is the perfect conductor. The Torah knows exactly how much of each taiva I need. And that they're very valuable, very chashuv. Our taivas are very, very, very chashuv. Very important. The right place, the right time, how much kedusha I need, what my job is, how I should react to things, what I should keep away from completely, what I should keep away from a little bit, what takes priority over something else. The Torah is the conductor of the orchestra that is my life. It brings out all my koichos in harmony, in perfection. The more I am dovuk to the life of Torah, the more freedom I have. Because I'm, we said this mashal, I think it's a correct mashal. Let's say I have two children, let's say I have twin boys. And I decide I'm going to do an experiment. I'm going to treat these two boys completely differently. I'm going to see who comes out in better shape. One boy, I'm going to let him do whatever he wants. Whatever he wants. I'm not going to tell him what to wear. I'm not going to tell him when to get dressed. I'm not going to tell him when to wake up. I'm not going to tell him when to go to sleep. I'm not going to tell him if he should run in the street. He shouldn't run in the street. I'm not going to tell him. I'm not going to tell him he has to be nice and share with his friends. I'm not going to teach him that such a thing called please and thank you. I'm not going to make him like sit by the table when he eats. Nothing. I'm not going to teach him anything. Freedom. I'm going to let him do whatever he wants. And the second one, I'm going to raise gently but firmly. I'm going to teach him that when you speak to people, you have to treat them with respect. I'm going to teach him that friends are an important concept. You don't leave go of friends so easily. I'm going to, even if it's sometimes a weight on you. I'm going to teach him that you have to play it safe. Don't be in dangerous places. I'm going to teach him that it's worth working hard so that you can learn talents and skills. I'm going to teach him those things. And I'm going to watch the two grow up. One of them is free. First guy is free. The second one's not free. But what happens when both of these kids now turn 18? Okay, so we have wild men over here. And we have talented human beings. Which one is free? Well, wild man can't can't do anything with his life. He doesn't have a friend. He can't go to school. He can't become a professional. He can't accomplish anything. He's a slave. He's nothing. Created a caveman. But the second guy, who maybe I was limiting a little bit, he's free. He can choose whatever he wants to do in this world. And he has the resources to be able to do it. He wants to become a doctor, he can become a doctor. He wants to become a rav, he could become a rav. He wants to become he wants to open a pizza store, he can open a pizza store. He can do whatever he wants. He's free. Freedom is not no control. That's not freedom. That's Shiva, that's slavery. The same thing is true with us. We let ourselves run wild, we're enslaving ourselves. If we teach ourselves to live within, not repression and all these things like the guy and think that spirituality is all about. Spirituality is not about repression. Spirituality is about being a conductor, about harmonizing, about harmony. Anybody who has any midah in excess is damaging his other midahs. Is that all of our midahs and all of our personality traits should work in harmony with each other. That's freedom. Then I'm untroubled. That's freedom. Aleph. Beis. You talk about Shaivivim. It's a very, 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 very difficult topic. And it's not something we can really talk Barabbim about, Lamaisa's about. But there's one Lamaisa that we can talk about Barabbim. And that is this two parts to the Mamlech, the Seichel, and the Guf. One is that the Guf should be machni itself to the Seichel. And one is that the Seichel should become the Melech. We can talk about the Seichel becoming the Melech. I think it's a very important thing that people's focus shouldn't always be on the limitations of their guf, the impulses, the desires. A person also has to spend his focus on raising up his Seichel. We discussed when we learned Mesilas Yesharim the common misconception. The common misconception is that when you start getting through Mesilas Yesharim, so we're not the person of the Mesilas Yesharim, we're just looking through the window. But this person, this Shalem, first he becomes a Zahir, then a Zariz, then he becomes a Naki, then a Pirish, then a Tahar. As it goes along, we start feeling terrible for this guy. One by one, we just rip everything away from this guy. We just start feeling terrible for him. His life just becomes more drab and boring with each passing day. Okay, Zahiris and Zrizas, fine, we could swallow Nikias. Okay, but Precious, the guy just don't enjoy Olam Hazeh anymore, and then Tahara, that even when you do have to be for the right reason. We people don't read themselves to Sharm, they're like, oh, great, I can't wait. People don't read it that way. People are like, Le'aleinu, you know. Making a tremendous mistake. It's a tremendous mistake. The mistake is, you know how sometimes you're in a certain situation, you can't imagine life not in that situation. You push it, can't imagine life without it. Sometimes you can have a certain problem. You can't imagine. I know, some of you know I'm prone to headaches. When I have a headache, I can't imagine life without a headache. I can't imagine being without a headache. I just can't imagine it. And then when the headache goes away, I can't imagine having a headache. Sometimes when you live a certain way, it's the old air conditioning syndrome, that nobody puts an air conditioner in their window until it's 100 degrees. Even though for every year, for the last 20 years, that you know it got hot every summer, but until it gets hot, you can't imagine that it gets hot. And nobody takes the air conditioner out of the winter until it turns 0 degrees. Even though every winter it turns cold, but until we experience it, we can't imagine it. We have the same problem with Mesilas Yesharim. The guy who's a pirish, the guy who's a Tahar, he's someone who learned to have Geshmak from Ruchnius. He's not a person who says, no, I don't, Don't give me a steak. I have to learn Gemara. That's not what he's doing. He's a person who's saying, I don't have time for a steak. I have to learn a Gemara. He's a person who actually learned what we can't be masig, which is he learned to taste tastes that are so fine that they're beyond us. It's the mashal, if you give a three-year-old a bottle of beer, or spare ribs, or a lollipop, which one will he choose? So like the shaita, he chose a lollipop. Right, because his tastes aren't fine enough to choose the good things in life. Our tastes are not fine enough to choose the good things in life. The good things in life are ruchnius. And we have to develop our taste to be able to feel the geschmack of ruchnius. It takes a while. Someone gets involved in learning, little by little he starts to get taste for it. You learn a Gemara and something's like, that's nice, that Gemara feels good. It feels good. You hear a svara, where you work hard, and suddenly the hard work, an incredible thing happens. The hard work starts to feel good. Kachi darka shel Torah, you don't read this thing, not me. You actually could understand it. Ashrecha ba'olam hazeh, v'tayv lach ba'olam haba. You actually can understand how in this world, after a while, the people who are spending their lives sweating over a Torah are actually enjoying life in this world more than we are. The guy in the Mesilas Yesharim, he's laughing at us. He's like, you're not doing what I'm doing because you're busy doing what you're doing? Go ahead and enjoy your lollipops. He's laughing at us. Our childish enjoyments. You just don't know. I have a close friend who called me up a couple of months ago. Shmuzik, he got married. So he was telling me that he made a barbecue. And I also make barbecues, and I like barbecuing. But he was describing to me what kind of meat he bought, what kind of cut he bought. Now, I had no idea how many different types of cuts of meat there are. I usually try to look for something that says steak on it. And I thought, I'm sophisticated. Because when I grew up, it was Frank's, I like steak to steaks. He starts saying he got this specific cut. I never heard of it before, and I don't remember what it was. And then he soaked in it the whole day in a certain sauce, and then he put it on the barbecue on a certain temperature, and then quickly changed it to another temperature because he wanted the outside to be like this and the inside to be like this. My mouth was watering when he told me. But my point is that here's a person that took the chachma of preparing meat, and meat is not just meat. There's different kinds of meat, and different kinds of meat taste differently. So there's a wide spectrum of things that you can get into it. You go to these wine tasting things, people smelling the corks. This wine, this is a red grapes, sweet. This is a, and you're like, I don't know, I'll make kiddush on it. You just don't get it. The person who learns how to appreciate ruchnius, he looks at a taisus this way. You're like, another taisus. He's like, not another taisus. This is this kind of taisus. It's not just another taisus. And there are people who are mashkia kaiches and learning that will tell you, Bava Kama is different than Bava Metzia. We learn Bava Kama, it's like this. We learn Bava Metzia, it's like that. And the Rishonim, this Masechta, these are the main Rishonim. But when you're learning the Ran and the Dorim, it's like that. And if you, it becomes a. It's just like this guy describing his steak to me, only the guy who's learning Gemara is having more fun, more geschmack, more hana. We're like, when Shabbos comes, so too many of us are, it's the day that I can't do anything. Shabbos, it's that miserable day that I can't do anything. And when a Shabbos dikayid comes to Shabbos, it's the day that his whole ruchnius opens up. And he just tastes the world on a different level. I've had the experience, Baruch Hashem, I learned by people that knew what Shabbos meant. So even though I don't know what Shabbos means, but I still get excited when it's time for Shabbos, just like my kids get excited, before a Yantif, even if they don't remember what the Yantif is about. I lived with people that get excited from Shabbos. I also get excited from Shabbos. And I've been in the company of people that when I say, Shabbos is coming, they look at me like, I pity you if that's what you look forward to. Like, almost like he feels bad for me. Like, you obviously don't know anything about the good things in life if you look forward to Shabbos. No, I pity him. Because he doesn't understand the taste of ruchnius. Someone who could give up a true Shabbos Suda for a Shabbos Suda talking about politics and Lashon Hara and not singing and not, and just like talking about the food the whole Suda. We're not restricting ourselves when we get involved in Shabbos. We're opening ourselves up to such a wider, broader sense of Hana. So when we talk about, all of us, and myself included, we hear Shaivim and we're like, oh, okay, we'll talk about it next year, you know, not this year. It's like, we don't want to hear about it. That's not the first focus. The first focus is not the not. The first focus is, let's develop our taste for Ruchnius. Let's develop it. When we every once in a while, we stumble on some Geschmack and Ruchnius. Let's squeeze it all out. Sometimes, every once in a while, a person gets hooked into a good davening. It just starts to go. It's going. Davening is hard, but sometimes a person gets hooked. It's going, davening. Even if it's just the singing by Kedusha. But it's going. Take note to yourself. Make a little notation. I'm enjoying this. I'm not enjoying it like I enjoy a steak. It's a different type of enjoyment. But I'm enjoying it. I feel connected. It feels good. Where every once in a while, a person could be in a shir. Or a person could be learning something. Or a person could be just thinking. Or a person could be helping another person. Sometimes you just go do that chesed with somebody else. Sometimes even when the person himself doesn't know it. And it just feels right. Feels good. We don't think about it. We should think about it. We should realize, you know something? I'm doing something for somebody else. Not for myself. So it tastes good. It tastes even better than when I said something to somebody today, he told me, that's a big statement. I don't know if you could say that, but I'm 100% confident that it's true. 100%. I've suggested to this person that there is not a single person in the world today who's happy and doesn't give to other people. Not a single person in the world who's happy and doesn't give to other people. Our definition of happiness can't exist without giving to other people. Doing chesed. Doing some type of chesed, with a certain happiness, with a certain time to it. Even sometimes if it's difficult chesed, your kind of chesed, it's difficult chesed, but it's a difficult chesed, but there's just a sense of doing chesed brings a certain satisfaction. That's called a ruchniyistik atayinuk. It's a ruchniyistik gishmak. I think that's an avodah that we can work on. That's important, everyone in their own madrega. And with that, if we can do that, who knows if how many of these other limitations and difficulties that we have could just drop off by themselves. Because we're going to be too busy for it all. Too busy really enjoying ourselves to have to deal with our Yetzirah. We're going to tell our Yetzirah to get lost. Don't waste your time, I found something that I really enjoy.